I love the challenge of a hard tenant. I love it. Because guess what? If I didn't know what their problems and their concerns were, I wouldn't become better. Like, I want you to tell me, and even a trouble owner, I'm like, okay, tell it to me straight. What did we do wrong? Where can we do better? Because mistakes are how you get better. Mistakes, problem tenants, lack of communication. Where did it break down? Solve it. You literally have to like back things up 10 spaces just to get to the end. You have to back it up, figure out what the core problem is, and then move forward with your steps.
Welcome to another episode of the Profitable Property Management Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Muela. Today, I'm talking to Sarah Hatch from Hatch Property Management and Sales. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, Sarah, where should we start? Maybe we could wind the clock all the way back to the very beginning. How did you get your start in property management?
Good story here, or I guess. So I have always been interested in building and construction and that kind of a thing. So I went to college at Brigham Young University, and I was always working full-time and going to school full-time throughout my entire time, my 4 years at BYU. And I worked for a construction company. So I also dated a few handymen, got my hands, you know, into a lot of things, and loved everything about like houses and building. And ever since I was little, I, you know, a teacher would say, draw me a picture, you know, draw any picture that comes to your mind. And I would always draw houses. I would always draw a picture of a house. And that desire to like fix things and like it, I naturally, after college, even though I graduated with a degree in psychology and a math minor, they're like, how did you get in property management? So I was lucky enough to get a job at a commercial development firm in DC, very well-known commercial development company. And they loved the fact that I already had the lingo of construction down. They already knew that I knew what I was doing. And so I helped build office buildings in Tyson's Corner in Virginia. I was helping with that. And
Commercial.
And then I ended up moving a little bit farther outside the city. And if you know DC, traffic is horrible. And so I asked in the firm, you know, do you have any other jobs that are maybe closer for me to get to? And it happened to be in a high-rise multifamily building. And so they said, the only job we have is a leasing agent position open. And I said, got to start somewhere. So I started as a leasing consultant. I worked my way up to be an assistant manager in about 6 months. And then I worked my way up in like 1 or 2 years to be the training manager for everyone in the company in multifamily. So people who have had a higher rank than I did, all the way up to, you know, all the way down to a leasing agent. So I was the training manager. My dad was in the service, and he's in the sergeant major in the Army. And he was just like deployed to Iraq. And I thought that the best thing for me was to go back and be near my family while he was gone to support them. And so I moved to Pittsburgh, which is where I'm from. Moved to Pittsburgh, got a job at another multifamily community, and then just kept getting promoted and promoted. They said, okay, the next step is for you to come back to DC and manage more communities. So by that time, my dad had returned from Iraq. So I moved back to DC and decided that there was nowhere else to go up in my organization. And I said, well, I always wanted to own my own own property management firm or real estate firm. I'd always had that in my head. I just fell in love with property management when I was a leasing agent. And they didn't have anywhere else for me to go. I was already a senior regional property manager, and my boss, the director, was not quitting anytime soon. So I was like, man, I gotta shift gears. So shifted gears, and I was a commercial property manager, and I loved every bit of that. Got my RPA with the BOMA Institute and learned everything about commercial property management, and building and construction was like my favorite topics. And I ended up getting recruited to another property management firm in DC. So I managed office buildings, and then they saw my work and they said, we want you to come work for us. And this is like the highest class commercial property management firm in DC that I got hired at. They have very high quality, very high customer service requirements. And it was very tough to manage office buildings, and half of your salary is given to you in a bonus form based on your clients' surveys. So twice a year, the clients got surveyed, and if you didn't score high enough, you didn't get your bonus. You didn't make it.
I see.
So it was all about making your client happy, being a yes person versus a no person, and going above and beyond for every client. Like, they ask you for, something at this level, and you go this level. You go extra high in order to achieve that. You have to wow them. So flash forward a few years, I met my husband and got married very quickly, within like 3 or 4 months of meeting. And I had my first child. So within the time, I managed the Watergate in DC. That was the company that I was with. They were all about customer service, like I was saying. And my husband proposed on the roof of the Watergate, had my first child, and unfortunately their version of customer service meant that I had to be present in front of my clients at least 4 days a week. I asked if I could shrink that down to 3 days a week so I can stay home with my baby. And they said no. So I said, okay, I quit. I think that family is way more important. And it was a life changer. My husband always knew that I wanted to have my own property management firm. And he says, well, maybe now's the time. Maybe now's the time to make that jump. It's a big leap of faith, because I went from a high six-figure income to nothing. And I had to hustle. I had to hustle to get clients. And I, you know, crowdsource my friends, crowdsource my, you know, community. I'm very involved in my church. I've created such raving fans that alone has helped me like grow my business.
So you're managing in residential, correct?
Yeah.
Why did you choose to manage in residential with your commercial background?
So in commercial, you always had an engineer in the building, right, who did all the maintenance and stuff. And while I love being face-to-face with people and talking with people and making them happy, there's a component that I was missing. So I love troubleshooting things maintenance-wise. Mm-hmm. I love that aspect. And residential property management was a way that I could actually get that love and desire.
COVID, commercial in general right now, struggling. So I'm so curious, what's your take and your perspective on what's happening in commercial right now?
Well, there's so many remote workers. Employers like the one that I had actually had to figure out how to keep your work and your company going with everyone working from home. So now I'm super jealous, because that company that I did work for, that they said, no, I can't stay home 2 days a week to be with my baby. And I'm like, fine, I'll be one of your competitors. So, yeah, I mean, I think that now they're struggling. They're struggling to actually occupy office space. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is, when I was looking for office space for my own company, I went to them and I said, I want the best building that you have. in the zip code that I want. Can you find me office space? And so I use them. I leverage them and my connections to get a really critical office space zip code that I knew was going to. So Amazon is coming to Crystal City. Mm-hmm. I wanted either Crystal City or Alexandria, Old Town Alexandria. And we landed on Old Town Alexandria right off the Beltway.
So you're in office.
Yeah.
Got it.
But it's just a landing pad.
It's just a landing pad. How many days a week do you work in office?
Maybe a half day. So yeah, every time, all of my employees that are local, so I have a portion of my staff that are remote, portion of my staff that are local, very few less local people than remote staff at this point. And we all have to like have a day in the office so that we can check mail, mm-hmm. deposit checks, that kind of a thing. And we also house all of our maintenance equipment. So mm-hmm. I have one whole office that is nothing but equipment and move-in bag products and things like that. And then the other office has like three workstations at it that you can just crash on any one of them. So
open desk sort of thing.
Yep.
What's door count and head count?
So I'm a little employee heavy, but I did that on purpose in order to provide the same customer service that I learned about in commercial. So I have approximately 200 doors, and that is shrunk down from the summertime when I decided that I didn't want to work with certain people anymore. Mm-hmm. I was like, you are too difficult. And we ended up at around 200. Mm-hmm. So we're 200 and I have 15 employees.
Wow. So what's the average rent?
So average rent is anywhere. So I just did a calculation recently because I wanted to figure out our numbers a little bit closer. And our average rent is $3,075 per month.
For sure.
But they range in price from like our higher end is like $5,500 per month.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. And what's the average number of properties per owner roughly?
One or two.
Got it. Okay. So it skews. This is less professional investor and more skews towards accidental landlord.
There's a reason why. We're in D.C. and we service the military clientele and State Department.
Transient.
And you know, the hardest part of our job is when an owner moves back into their house. So about a third of our houses are owned by military who intend to move back into their house when they cycle back into the D.C. area. So State Department goes away for 2 years on two-year cycles, sometimes longer, but they don't buy houses as investors. They buy houses in the areas that they know they're going to be returning to, and then they move back in. Mm. And that is the hardest transition ever to manage a house and their expectations about what they left behind mm-hmm. compared to what they're coming back to. It has been lived in. And yes, the attachment of their houses, oh my gosh, it's rough. It was their home once and now it's a rental and they can't stand how people are living in their home. Yeah, I know. It's very, very difficult, but it's the same State Department or military. I mean, they just have very high expectations of a property manager. So,
and how does that impact how you communicate?
Oh, a lot, which is why we're set up with so many RTMs because mm-hmm. they need answers really fast.
What percentage of the 15 people are RTMs?
So that's an interesting thing. So I also run a real estate brokerage too. Mm-hmm. So we do sales, we do rentals in the DC area. You almost have to have a tenant agent in order to find a house. We don't do self-showings a lot in our area. You have to have an agent to enter the house. So I have agents. So I have one full-time leasing agent that is local, and I have one sales agent / leasing agent, full-time, local. I have a part-time leasing agent as well. And then I have a remote team member in Florida. She's my director of ops and my best friend. And her mom happens to be our bookkeeper who lives in Pennsylvania. And then I have 6 remote team members, 5 in the Philippines and 1 in Nicaragua. Mm. And then I have, goodness, I'm missing somebody, an associate broker as well that comes and helps with training. And I have 2 other local property managers. And then I have a part-time home inspection coordinator as well. Hmm. So, yeah.
How many transactions will you handle on the brokerage side this year?
Ballpark. Oh, goodness. For all of my agents, yeah. Approximately 20 to 25.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the size and scope of the business right now, what's your aspiration of, like, what feels ideal to you? Where do you want to take it to?
Okay. So I have a lot of anxiety about hearing people with, like, 800 doors. I'm like, no, no way. I could never do what I want to do with that many doors, right? The control would be lost, in my opinion. And not that I'm a control freak, but I am to a certain extent. So ideally, I've always wanted just 200 doors. I want to keep it tight. I want to keep people happy. I want people to be banging on my door wanting me to be their property manager. And that happened this summer, along with I was in the middle of 5 sales transactions. And so you have to balance. So all of my property managers are licensed agents as well. And so my take on the property management business is it feeds my sales business. So out of my transactions that I've had this year, 90% came from my doors mm-hmm. that I already had. Mm-hmm. So I'm building a pipeline for my employees by allowing them to do the BDM for their own team. Like, so we're transitioning from departmental to pods, or what I call teams. And the property manager will be the one who is the first introduction to the owner. And then we hope to wow them enough, because we don't have anything locking them in to selling with us, but we hope to wow you enough that you'll use us on the sale of your home and purchasing your next home.
What's the average price on those home sales?
My average is somewhere between $850 and
$900. Got it. Okay. It is interesting talking to folks that are in higher priced areas, because the unit economics and everything is...
I don't need as many doors mm-hmm. to keep my doors open. Mm-hmm. I just don't. It doesn't make sense. I mean, my average management fee is maybe less than what you have in other markets, because my rents are way high, thankfully. I don't think I would have had the success and be able to hire the team members that I have if I didn't have that.
And how many years have you been in business now?
I've been in business since 2015. My daughter was 4 months old when I started my company, my oldest.
So what are some goals for, I want to like calibrate on the phase that you're at, what mm-hmm. you're trying to optimize, what you're trying to dial, what you already have optimized. What are some goals for you in 2024?
So part of my managing my company, and a big part of our team culture, is setting goals. So every year we have a goal setting session and a goal review session. So we review everybody's goals halfway through the year, take a check-in. And this year I have almost achieved all of my goals. So next year, you know, you have to set new ones. My last goal that I have to check off is running a half marathon.
Dope.
And that will be November 11th in the Richmond half marathon. And I'm really excited about that. Next year, I plan to focus more on the company that I plan on growing, which is a little bit different. That, I don't know. Wolf told me to ask you about this or tell you about this.
Yeah, tell me.
He's like, because Wolf is my coach. Mm. I actually hired a coach at the beginning of this year in order for me to achieve.
Smart move.
Yes. In order for me to achieve all of my professional goals. And, you know, you don't know what you truly want until you start like exploring and digging deep into what your big time goals are, right? Mm-hmm. You can have small calculated goals that you can achieve in a couple of months or even a couple of years, but what is your long-term goal? And that's what he helped me find. And my long-term goal and my love of maintenance has driven me to a hole that I see in our market, which is a lot of people hire remote team members for their maintenance coordination, and they don't know how U.S. houses are built, right? Comes back to my construction background. Mm-hmm. They don't understand what a garbage disposal is. They think that's like taking out the trash. And it's like, how can you rely on them to truly troubleshoot for your properties when, and make sure that they're sending out the right person and not wasting the owner's money in sending out a contractor that a tenant could easily do, right? So my goal is to create a company and a video library that allows tenants and RTMs all of the troubleshooting resources for everything maintenance. So, starring yours truly. So creating that.
Got it. So yeah. The next passion project is to provide that resource.
Yes, yes. Maybe pairing it up with other maintenance coordination softwares and maybe having a subscription and doing product endorsements.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You may be the only person that this anecdote will ever be relevant to. I read an article the other day, actually it was a video and it was fascinating. And I was going to send it out in my newsletter, but I just kept thinking, I think only like 5% of people are going to find this interesting. I'll share it with you. Mm-hmm. The gist of it was a profile of a cat burglar that graduated to bigger and bigger targets. Mm-hmm. And the cat burglar's method involved mastering the U.S. building code. He's breaking into homes, mm-hmm. and the best way for him to figure out how to get in and out of a home was to understand how homes were built. Exactly. Where in the walls were the electrical panels stored? Where were the drop-ins and the exits? And I just thought, that's genius. It seems like a lot of work.
Yeah.
But that's genius. That specific context, I guess the point being, that specific context is really valuable, but I don't hear a lot, that much conversation about like the leverage, the upside about that comprehension. I could see how that would be material for you.
You have to know about all of the things. You know, somebody says, hey, Sarah, I have a problem at this one house, right? Like a house that we're managing. And what do you think that we should do next? And so I'm constantly creating little content videos for my RTMs to like, okay, have them try this, this, and this first. And then hire a contractor, but not before. So, but you have to understand there's so many questions that I have, right? There's questions about like, okay, well, is there a sump pump system? Is there a, you know, how far is it buried? You know, are all of the lines going into the sump pump, are they cleared? Have you done your preventative maintenance on it? You know, do you choose to do an interior French drain system or an exterior? In DC, we have townhomes that flood in heavy rains, right? You got to ask all the right questions. You have to put the right systems in place in the house in order for you to like give the recommendations to your homeowners. You have to know everything about houses. So,
can you think of any examples of situations where your troubleshooting was effective and whereas the alternative would have been really expensive?
Oh, yeah. Hit me. So it's one of my favorite things is troubleshooting maintenance with tenants. Because they're like, wow, you know so much about houses. I was like, that's why I love what I do, is because I can help you. You're panicked. I stay calm. I ask the questions. I love getting my tenants on FaceTime. Or we, you know, whatever kind of Zoom app or whatever that we use. So I'm sitting there. I don't care what time of day it is. If there's an emergency and I'm the one on call, I will FaceTime them. I will guide them through their home. Most homes in our portfolio I have walked. And so I know where all the shutoffs are. I know where all the electrical panels are. That knowledge helps me be able to do my job better and mitigate future loss. So also my team, all my local PMs are not afraid to go out to properties and start the mitigation on a flood. So get the shop back out, bring the dehumidifiers and the carpet fans and everything. And I've had many insurance adjusters come to the property to do their initial assessment. And they were like, wow, did you have a mitigation company coming out? And I was like, no, we did this. They were like, wow, that's really good. Remove the baseboards, you know, mm-hmm. dry the carpet, put the carpet fans underneath. I mean, you just know these things because otherwise you will have future damage, right? You're going to have more mold. You're going to have all of that. So knowing the buildings and the systems and it helps. So
what's like one situation that you feel like was really emblematic of that, where you were really clear you saved the owner a lot of money?
So there was a tenant who called in the middle of the night And I said, ooh, okay, you have an active leak from your toilet, okay, and draining into the kitchen. So I said, okay, go upstairs, shut the water valve off, and, does the toilet shake, right? There's troubleshooting things. You straddle the toilet, you shake it a little bit. Is it loose to the ground? Which would mean that the leak is possibly coming from sewage versus a supply line, right? So you got to know the difference. You got to know what you're dealing with there. And so I was like, okay, cool. It's coming from the supply line, right? So shut the water off. Okay. Then you have this hole that's forming, this little bubble that's forming in your ceiling. Look like a bubble in the drywall. And so I said, okay, your next step is I want you to go downstairs. So I want you to get on a ladder and I want you to take a knife and I want you to put a little tiny hole in there and I want you to have a bucket underneath and I want you to catch the water. Okay. And then once the water is completely drained, I want you to open it up just a little bit more. Anything that's soft or touch, to the touch, I want you to cut it out. Right. If you have a knife that is good enough for it. Right. I have drywall knives. You should see the back of my car. It is like a handyman car. And I have, we have four company vehicles and I equip all of them with everything that my property managers might need to do all of this. So anyways, they did that and the owner only had to pay for the cost of repairing the supply line and the little bit of drywall. Had that gone on for too long, had a property manager not known how to troubleshoot it that night, it would have caused more damage in their kitchen. It was right above their stove. It was, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like there mm-hmm. there were other implications if I didn't get it taken care of. And so now they only had to do a small drywall repair and no mold. And tenant is happy.
And the value to the owner here is really clear. Do you feel like that the owner fully appreciates and like comprehends the value that's being created of that proactive approach?
We let them know.
You make sure that they're aware.
Oh, we make them, we make them aware. We're like, I tell my property managers whenever they're in a situation where they went above and beyond for the tenant or the owner, I'm like, you make sure that owner knows every step you did. You went to the property, you saw with your own two eyes what was going on, and you did XYZ, and now the next step is this. You communicate with them the whole way. Mm. So, yeah.
How do you think about after-hours maintenance lines? Mm-hmm. There's obviously a lot of folks that hear that idea of, like, getting a call at 2 in the morning, and they're like, wow, I don't want to do that. Uh-huh. After-hours is easy, and there's a ton of services like that, and it sounds like you're not a fan.
I'm not a fan of most. Because I feel like there has, again, where there's a hole in the system or in our industry in general, is that if a tenant calls in, there should be some, more, I guess, reducing of calls that end up going to the next day by the tenants being able to know what is going on in their house and being able to help mitigate. So back to my company idea is, the library of videos can be embedded in all of your systems so that it is constantly like, okay, tenant, did you try this or not? Watch this video, do this. Did it work? Yes or no? And then it will actually end up at a, property manager, and you don't have to do the troubleshooting yourself. It's all video, and everything's going to video now anyways.
So obviously one common denominator here is the tenant's willingness to troubleshoot and to lean in.
So yes, we have some tenants who won't even change a smoke alarm battery. And I am just like, come on, girls, you can do it. it's in their lease. It's their responsibility. If they can't figure it out and we have to hire somebody, obviously they're paying. But I want to empower them. I want them to know that they can do it. Just like a homeowner, just like a handyman, just like any contractor, you have the ability. It's so simple. So simple. Hmm.
I'm curious. This is not really an adjacency, but how do you think about resident benefits packages and the kind of wave of offerings of things that can be included for tenants?
So we have part of our resident benefit package is what we have the Second Nature package, but we've kind of morphed it into our own. We have a utility concierge, which everybody knows is a headache to wait on hold. So Washington Gas, one of our main gas providers in the area, has a 2-hour hold in order to get signed up. So why waste their time? I've actually brought a utility concierge in-house. So one of my RTMs, their whole job is utility concierge, and he does great at it. So
wow, and you just eat that cost and roll it into the RVP?
Yeah. So we have that. And because there's other providers out there who do that kind of work, and I wasn't happy with the feedback that I was getting from my tenants. I'm all about like positive feedback, and I got nothing but negative feedback. When somebody's trying to move in, it's just one more headache. So I said, how can I make this more smooth? What process can I put in place so that I get rave reviews versus unhappy reviews about that? So yeah.
And tell me more about what you think about optimizing for resident experience in general. How do you prioritize that? What's the upside there for you in your mind?
So in property management, you rarely have a high Google rating, right? Very few property management companies have high Google ratings.
It's very difficult.
It is because of maintenance, because of the resident experience. It rarely has to do with an owner's experience. It has to do with tenant experience. So the people who are giving you the worst reviews are your tenants, and you have to make them happy. You have to do everything you can to make them happy. And you have to do everything in my company to make them future clients, future buyers, and then sellers, and then buyers and sellers. So you have to begin with the end in mind. I want the whole real estate experience. And so we have every Thanksgiving, the Saturday before, we give out free pies. So we have Pie Palooza, and that is coming up. Super excited. We're planning for it. We have vendors, and a lot of our vendors that are here today are people who sponsored our event. So we have games. We have professional photography and videography going on. We give away pies right before Thanksgiving. We have donuts, coffee. We sit and mingle with our clients, and I love it. I love that experience. I love the fact that they get excited for the raffles. They put their name in a cup to win something. And we always make good about like celebrating that fact. And mm-hmm. we have it on our social media pages. We have it on our Facebook pages, website. We have a whole landing page on our website for our Pie Palooza. Mm. Every year we do it. Mm. Every single year. And it's not just our tenants, it's our owners too. So it's something that they get excited about. And you would not believe how many clients who were tenants or who were owners who come to that event and they become our buyers and sellers. Because that's the conversation that I've trained my agents to have is how do we convert them? How do we flip them? How do we get the ultimate real estate, be their end all, be all end all of their real estate needs?
Hmm.
Yeah. So giving back to the clients is so important, kind of like your second nature parties, go big or go home, you know? You just are constantly like wowed, like, oh my gosh, you have all of this set up. And it's usually pretty cold. We have music going. We have people dancing. We have little mini golf things going on for kids. We're like, it's like a family event. So, yeah.
What aspects of your identity do you think make you effective at your craft? Your mindset, your orientation, your belief system.
Great question. You know, my life really changed when I went to BYU, right? I was, you know, somebody who got into the best LDS school ever, right? And I hated it. I hated being there. But because I was there has led me to my goals and my dreams and my personality today. I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't have my goals of my faith and my religion and being able to carry me through. And in hard times, you know, you're like, okay, Heavenly Father, what do you want me to do right now? What is my direction? And every time it takes a leap of faith every change in your company, every hire that you make, it will either help you or hurt you with your ultimate goals. And so I'm very careful about who I let in, about who I let into my circle, my company. There's no time for, you know, poison or anything that will corrupt the culture of my company. Everybody is a cheerleader for one another. Everybody knows their goals. Everybody is very vulnerable because every team meeting that we have, the beginning of the meeting says, you know, starts off with, what are your wins from the weekend? What'd you do that was awesome? What did you do that was fun? And we know them. We know their RTMs. We know what they like to do for fun. We know what their goals are because we were all sitting in the goal meeting. I feel like when I'm in those meetings and like constantly asking myself and checking in with myself, what can I say to my team that will be the biggest impact? And that comes from like my faith, like my, you know, listening to the Spirit guide me in making certain decisions for my company. You got to make the right moves at the right time. And if you don't listen, you don't follow the directions, that's when things start falling apart. But that's, I guess, my... Sorry, am I talking too much?
No. Well, the flip side of that. So I hear faith. What fears do you struggle with? What fears have you grappled or wrestled with?
I am fearful sometimes, and I had been before I hired a coach, that my dreams and my goals weren't big enough for the people who I employed.
Tell me more.
So you have to make, as a leader, you have to make your dreams and goals bigger than everyone else's so that everyone else has the room to grow within. So for instance, making the opportunities for my PMs to then become agents when the clients want to sell, that I had to construct. I had to figure out, how am I going to make this work? How am I going to make sure that that is seamless in their communication with that client, in how they're receiving it, in order to make their dreams come true financially and to support their family? It is like overwhelming for me. To think that so many people depend on my company as their livelihood. I'm sure you feel the same way with your people, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you might not cry about it, but...
It's a lot of responsibility. Yeah.
But it's not... It's creating something that you have built that have so many people being able to achieve their own goals makes me happy. It makes me so happy. But you literally have to set your goals way higher than theirs. And I realized I have some pretty amazing people that are in my company, and they have some pretty big goals. And I have to readjust my goals and my company goals in order to fit theirs in. So anyways, that's...
That totally makes sense. That's a great answer. I feel that. As well, when I reflect on what allows me...
Oh my God, thanks.
When I reflect on what allows me to work with the caliber of talent that I need to be surrounded by, mm-hmm. in order to stay stimulated and motivated, yeah. it does look like pursuing something ambitious. Mm-hmm. And it's a virtuous circle for me because I want to work with hard chargers, people that are motivated, mm-hmm. people that are hungry, people that are talented, mm-hmm. capable. Mm-hmm. And those type of people... have options. They can go different places, do different things. Yes. And if that opportunity isn't provided here, it'll be provided elsewhere because the motivation that they have is intrinsic. It's not me telling them to do something.
Yes.
Like for me, the clearest heuristic is to know that they're doing awesome stuff here, but if they weren't doing awesome stuff here, they'd be doing it elsewhere because it's their thing.
Yes.
I'm not telling them to be really motivated. It's just, it's their DNA and their
exactly.
makeup.
Exactly.
And I get to steward it for a period of time and for yes. a window, not always, but it's a real privilege. And it does require making sure that not only do I have a vision, but I'm communicating it. And that's something yeah. that can feel, it can feel almost overwhelming at times the degree to which the vision has to be communicated over and over and over and over
repeatedly.
Again.
Repeatedly, yes.
Yeah.
Reminding
them. You can't over-communicate about that.
You can't. You really can't. And, you know, my agents who do, like, leasing, right, they help tenant agents. I'm providing an opportunity with our database to grow theirs, right? You met this amazing person when you were showing a house, and guess what? The house might not work out. Guess what? They might have a lot of money in the bank that they can actually buy instead of renting. Find out what their needs are and tackle it. Some people want to rent for a little while before they buy, but I'm providing a whole database of people to my leasing agents when they look in the guest cards that come in, and they totally appreciate it. You know, we're targeting a few of our already known tenants to become buyers, and that makes them be able to feed their families when they sell.
Hmm.
I don't know. I love what I do. I love having the team that I have. They're really amazing. I'm actually flying one of my team members out to the Process Conference in Vegas in January from the Philippines. And she's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that you chose me. I'm like, because you're awesome. You're awesome. You deserve it. You know, creating those rewards that they can really benefit from. So the other thing about our team I'll bring up is one of our team members had in the Philippines had their house caught on fire and burned completely to the ground. And everybody was like devastated, like for him, right? And we all contributed almost enough money for him to be able to rebuild his home. All of us, just the team.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
I think earlier in my career, I felt more drawn towards highlighting stories of folks that were wanting to build 30,000, 20,000 giant empire, et cetera. Oh, no. And the thing that I learned over time was that while that makes for some great headlines, it can provide a skewed perspective in so much as it's interpreted as a prerequisite for contentedness and for happiness. It's a thing to do. There's joy in it. Mm-hmm. Can be joy in it. But really, it's just a thing to do. There are so many ways to be happy and fulfilled, whether it's being in business, not being in business, if it is being in business, running a business that's really large, really small. It's very individualized, and giving yourself permission to enjoy and find meaning in what you're doing is the prerequisite, not externalizing it. Like, if I achieve these goals, then I have permission to be happy. Then what I'm doing can be valid. It's at any size and scale, just giving yourself the permission to say, this matters to me just because it matters to me. I see you doing that with where you're at in your business, and I think that's really awesome.
Yeah, I love it. I love what I do.
That's a gift.
I absolutely love it. Somebody says, you know, wouldn't you like to work just 4 hours a day, right? We had this conversation the other day in a group, and I was like, when you love what you do, it's not work. It's just not work anymore. It's more of like, this is my hobby that I'm putting everything into, right? But it's nice that you're making money from it. My goal in like one of my financial goals, like, so everybody knew, like I said, you're very vulnerable in my company. So I was like, listen, my husband is a chiropractor and a very tall chiropractor. He has a lot of medical student debt, as a lot of people have. And my goal this year was to be able to pay it all off before interest started accruing again, right? During COVID. COVID was the best thing for that.
Deferred loans?
Yes. So we paid off from the start of COVID his entire $300,000 plus in student loans because of my business.
Good for you.
So we finally kicked it to the curb in July.
Congratulations.
So that was one of my goals. So my 2024 goals are to start creating my video database. So videos I already have that I just need to edit and put out to social media, and making that my drive for 2024. So by the end of the year, hopefully I'll have enough and the quality of videos that I want, that I think are good enough, because I'm pretty high standard for myself to be able to start marketing it, start sharing it, you know, getting enough of a following on my various social media channels to be able to do that. But I never, ever, even if I was to cross over, you hear a lot of property managers like, oh, I sold my business. I sold my business and then I you know, had my passion project. Mm-hmm. Oh, that is not me. Oh, no, no, no. I would never want to sell my company. I want to leave that as a legacy for my kids. Mm. I take them along with me. Mm. They help me create content videos too, by the way.
I remember what I was going to ask you about. I wanted to ask you about the flip side. I hear this like joy and the fact that you're doing something that doesn't feel mm-hmm. like work.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like
work. What about the flip side of that? What about dealing with difficult tenants and evictions and the unpleasantness that is kind of in some ways inextricably connected to property management?
It's all about problem solving, right? At the core, I'm going back to my psychology. My psychology degree. At the core, someone has discomfort. They are upset for some reason, right? What is their reasoning behind that? What are their fears? Why are they reacting in the way that they are? You have to get to the core of that in order to be able to tear it down, figure out what the core problem is, and then solving what their problem is, not what you think their problem is. You know, are they getting super upset about this maintenance call because they have pets or children in their house? What is their motivation? Why are they making this call? Like, why are they caring so much about something that we think is just so simple and easy and dumb, right? They have a reason for calling. You have to figure out what that is. Listen, always listen to them and be able to solve their problem. Whether you can solve it today and whether you have vendors who are your, you know, they're your team too. The tenants rely on the maintenance person coming to their property to really, truly solve their problem. And for me, I love the challenge. I say that now. I might regret this. I love the challenge of a hard tenant. I love it. Because guess what? If I didn't know what their problems and their concerns were, I wouldn't become better. Like, I want you to tell me, and even a trouble owner, I'm like, okay, tell it to me straight. What did we do wrong? Where can we do better? Because mistakes are how you get better. Mistakes, problem tenants, lack of communication. Where did it break down? Solve it. You literally have to like back things up 10 spaces just to get to the end. You can't just start from here sometimes. You have to back it up, figure out what the core problem is, and then move forward with your steps.
Do you think any of this perspective is impacted by the class of real estate that you're managing as opposed to Class C in Detroit?
Oh my gosh, yes. Okay. Yes, yes. So I hear about other property manager companies who manage like C-class properties, and I'm like, oh my goodness. Like,
so you're aware. Okay, got it. So this is a distinct playbook of what you're doing here. Like your joy and your connection is connected to the specific playbook you're running with the type of real estate and tenant, et cetera.
Very high level.
Makes sense.
We have no C-class properties in my portfolio on purpose. Mm. So as my property manager onboarding, one of the number one things that they have to check a box in Lead Simple. One of their boxes that they check is, did they make an appointment with the owner to do the in-person visit? You cannot go on to the next step. That's a big old hand. You cannot go on to the next step until you have personally felt, smelled, walked through their house, right? You have to have that contact with the house. And they know my high standard. And they're like, Sarah, this is not the quality. This is not the quality of house. This is not the quality of owner that we want. We can't continue to have our raving fans if we bring in garbage. We cannot continue to market a property where we're getting negative feedback from agents being like, yeah, good luck.
Got it.
Good luck renting that. No, we don't want that.
This is clarifying. So you're 200 unit parameter, really, in many ways, it's kind of a forcing function for you to be continuously raising and elevating the quality of what you're managing.
Yes. Yes. You want A-class tenants. You have to have an A-class property and an A-class owner and an A-class team to run it.
Makes sense. Yeah.
You've got to have that perfect storm. If you have, so I've always shared this with my team. You have to have at least two of the three components. Okay. It's either tenant, owner, or house. You have to have at least two that completely rock. Okay. Is it a brand new house? Do you like the owner? Do you think we can attract the kind of tenant that we want for that type of a house? And then, okay, bring them on. Bring them on, right? If it's a kind of what you think is a trouble owner in a very old house, that's two strikes out of the three, right? Mm-hmm. You've got to have all three. So you always have problems. You always have negative reviews when two of the three are wrong. And so we try to keep everybody super high.
This is a very interesting and specific playbook. If somebody wanted to get in touch to talk shop and hear more about the playbook that you're running, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Oh, Sarah@hatchpmandsales.com.
Okay. Well, Sarah, thanks for coming on. I really enjoyed hearing your perspective and your story and your passion and your enthusiasm. Thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
Let's leave it there.
That's it for this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. You can check out other episodes along the way. If you're watching this on YouTube, appreciate a subscribe. Any comments? I'm always here to engage. If you're listening on an audio platform, would really appreciate a review. It's a great way to help other people find out about the show.